Welcome back, everyone. It's another episode of Inside Boxing presented by PPV.com in association with Uncrowned and Yahoo Sports. I'm Dan Canobio. He's the champ, Chris Algieri. And we have a lot to get to on this episode. We have Tyson Fury returning back to the ring and Conor Benn. That's happening on Netflix. We have a slew of news. I feel like the news is happening faster than I can comprehend. And I sit on my phone all day long trying to comb through the boxing news. Chris, how are you, my friend? Looks like you're in another hotel.
Yeah, what else is new? I like you use the word slew. You have a slew of news. But, yeah, I mean, let's get into it. I'm good. I mean, I'm on the road as usual. Always ready to work. Always bringing my gear ready for whatever. What's up? What do we got? What do we got? Because, you're on your phone a lot more than me. And even you are missing stuff. So what am I missing?
I want to give you the floor here. I know you don't read the comments. And I know you don't read any of what our people have to say, but they were upset with you, man, after the last fight. Chisora Wilder, they were very upset. What happened to Chris? Why is he so upset? These guys gave it their all. They tried their best. They tried to win. Why is Chris being a boxing snob? So I just wanted to give you the floor.
Because I am Because I am a boxing snob. And I will say this. I was a little harsh on them because I forgot that they weren't the guys they were. And I was really excited about the fight. I was really excited because I like both of them a lot. I really like Derek Chisora. I really like Deontay Wilder. And I got caught up the way fans do because I'm a fan, ultimately. I'm a fan of Derek. I'm a fan of Deontay. And I got caught up in thinking that they were going to look like they did back in the day. Don't know why. I did because, you know, I guess that happens to us fans. And I just expected more. I wanted war from Chisora. I wanted Deontay, because he showed it in spots. If Deontay fought the way he did his last three fights, okay, that's just what Deontay is right there, right now. But then I said in that eighth round, he threw three right hands, and I'm like, whoa, he's right there. He could do this at any time. Why is he not doing it? Then I saw the Dan Raphael article. These guys are friends. And I was like, oh, it looked like they fought like they were friends. So as much as I'm taking back being a little bit harsh, I'm also not, because they fought like friends. I don't want to see guys fight like friends. I want to see guys fight tooth and nail to the bitter end. And I think they could have fought harder than they did, put it that way. So was I a little harsh on them? Yes. Was I also right? Yes. So for everyone who's hating me in the comments, do your homework. Watch how these guys could have fought, what they should have fought. Because this was not a retirement fight for both these guys. Deontay Wilder wants to go fight for a world title. You've got to fight a certain kind of way if you want to be a world titleist again. Chisora, I get it. Chisora, I expected more from him because I thought he was going to win. That's another thing. But also, like, it was his last fight. He's a great fighter. He has my utmost respect. He was not going out there saying, I'm going to be world champion again, because he never has been. Deontay is making another world title run, according to him. You can't go out there and hold on to your right hand that way. Especially if you still got it, because apparently he does. He threw it a few times, and I'm like, whoa, there it is. So, yeah, again, as much as I'm apologizing, I'm not.
So you weren't a fan of the I love you moment in the eighth round? And then Deontay missed him and then pushed him out of the ring?
No. It was a
That fight was pure comedy. I watched it back. Pure comedy. I was in the same boat as you. Like, I had it up on the screen. Like, I paid $50 for it.
That's another thing, guys. That was a 50. I forgot about that. You and I were. I was complaining to you quite a bit about that.
Yeah, it was a $50 fight. I put it on, and like, I was looking at it through a prism of like, this might be sloppy, but it was really sloppy. I don't want to spend too much time on it because we have a lot to get into. I wanted to give you the floor. So you did fire back, and we'll see what happens. You said your piece, and we'll see what happens in the heavyweight division. We'll have more on that in just a bit. I do want to start with something. I was in Brooklyn this past week at the Barclays Center. I was at the Xander Zayas Boots Ennis press conference, and that was a fun one. That was a real refreshing presser in terms of two guys in their prime, a fight that everyone's excited for, a fight that we did not expect to happen. And I wanted to see your takeaways from it because I have some myself. I thought Boots was rather chatty, never seen him like that, and I kind of interpret it as overconfidence, a little bit of nervous energy, and then I really didn't like what Hearn was saying, but I understand where he was coming from. Hearn with the, I can't believe they made this fight, You're out of your minds, top rank, to the point where Todd DeBuff had to step in and say, hey, listen, I didn't even want to make this fight. So it was a lot of mind games being played up on that stage to get into the mind of the 23-year-old Zayas, who I feel like he's uber confident and is on a generational heater right now between winning fights, the Bad Bunny exposure, making this fight. He's the golden child right now boxing. But I thought it was, all in all, I thought it was very, very encouraging as we kick off this new era with DAZN, Matchroom, and Top Rank. It was a good press conference. I thought it delivered.
My take on it is we're seeing guys coming into their own in different ways. Xander, he's only 23, but he's gotten all the attention that he's been getting, and a lot of it's deservedly so because he has been performing and overperforming and getting better each and every time. He's also a supremely confident athlete. And so is his team around him. I've been around Xander for a very long time. I used to spar him when he was 20 years old. I've called his fights for Top Rank. I called his title winning effort for Top Rank. And I remember being in the fighter meetings with them, and literally they were calling out Fedora in the fighter meeting. Like, you're about to fight for your first world title. You're calling out Fedora? And they were dead set on, oh, no, I see holes. I can beat this guy right now. I was like, wow. And they were not, it was genuine. They were not being braggadocious at all. So I think that's just the way that these guys operate. The reason this fight is happening is Xander Zayas. It is not Todd DeBuff in Top Rank making this fight happen and going to Eddie Hearn. Even Eddie was like, I can't believe this fight's happening. Yeah, me either. I did not think, when they were talking about this fight, I was like, no way this happens now. The kid's 23. No way it happens. We spoke about it on our show. Guess what? This fight's happening because of that kid. It's happening because of Xander Zayas. He begged isn't the right word. He just came in and kicked in the door and was like, no, this is the fight I want. This is the fight we're going to make. I think it's a very calculated move. I think it's a smart move. I really do. Because not only is this a huge opportunity and a huge fight, he can win. That's the craziest thing. I'm talking to people and they're like, I think Boots is too confident. I think Boots thinks he's going to walk over this kid. I'm like, stylistically, it's a really tough fight for Boots. I've never seen Boots really close the distance on a guy who can move and is going to punch. Because if he sits there and fights the way that he did against Karen Chukotsian in the first fight, he loses. If he fights in the same way he did in the Karen Chukotsian fight, second fight, he loses. You can't just walk in the front door. Who was the Armenian fighter that he fought that Terrence Crawford had KO'd? Avanesian, exactly. You fight that fight with Xander, you lose. You can't fight that way. You've got to show me things you haven't shown. I've heard you can do it in the gym. I've heard all that. That's all great. Right. You got to do it on Fight Night. You got to do it under those lights. Because if you don't, Xander Zayas is going to box his shoes off and he's going to win that fight. But
yeah, I agree.
A lot of people in gyms are saying that maybe Boots is being a little too confident. And even, like you said, Eddie and them are.
Did you see that on the stage?
Yeah.
He was talking crazy, Boots. He wasn't even making sense. He got into the, why didn't you take the 55-45 to the winner? Okay, Chris, you've been in negotiations before, and I've been around in boxing enough to know that never in the history of a negotiation has this ever played out where, oh, we're going to do it 45-45, and then the final 10% goes to the winner. That's just not a thing. And that became a talking point during this press conference, as Boots was saying, like, why didn't you take 55% to the winner, 45 to the loser? Like, that didn't even make sense up there. He was just chirping. Also made comments to Zayas, like, you get hit flush. Like, Boots gets hit flush. That's like the kind of the beauty of Boots' style, is he's willing to get in there and get wet in order to deliver knockouts.
High contact style, yeah.
We're nitpicking and we're dissecting a press conference, but I think it plays into the psyche of these guys where it looked like Boots was very, very, I would say, overconfident and might be overlooking Zayas, who, let's be honest, he's actually doing it in the ring, albeit against lesser competition. But like you said, in the gym with Boots, he's almost like a mythical fighter. He's ranked number one despite having one fight at 154, a few rounds with an underwhelming opponent in Lima. It's very interesting, and just being up close and seeing them, the energy there is that Boots is he's very like more emotional than I remember him ever being.
Is that overconfidence or is that nervousness?
Well,
acting out of character is generally not overconfident. The guy's been confident his entire life.
Yeah, I would say, isn't it like a form of confidence could be a little bit of nervous? Overconfidence could be some nervousness?
That is my question. Also, so when you mentioned, I'm going to go a step further on the negotiating thing. That is not completely unheard of, but fighters don't ever bring up negotiations like that. You don't do that. The fight's done. The deal's done. Why are we talking about negotiations? Done. Don't talk about that.
You said, I can't believe you didn't take the 50, if I were you, Zayas, I would have taken more to be the winner. It shows that you're not confident. I just thought that Boots was trying to get into Zayas' head, like, big time. I mean, I'm going to intimidate this 23-year-old. He's not ready. That's clear. Like, they had, like, a plan. Like, Hearn is going to go up there and say his spiel. Yeah,
but that's the thing.
Like,
with Boots, because he's not that outward type of guy, I could see them kind of like coaching him to go out and say this, go out and say that.
Yeah.
You know, be that kind of guy. And I just, you know, that's the thing. When you go outside yourself, it comes off as not genuine. So that's probably what it is. It's probably not that he's not confident or was whatever, but like trying to make him do things that is outside of his own. Whereas Xander is coming across as very genuine, and his confidence level is coming because he believes in himself. He might be wrong.
I said to him.
He might be wrong, but like that's where he's at. And it does come off as very genuine. I don't know. This is interesting. How'd they look in person, size wise?
Oh, that was another thing too. Is Zeiss.
I heard the fat camp thing, but had it from
fat camp? Before we get
to fat camp, tell me how they looked in person, size wise to each other.
Zaius is huge. He's like 175 right now.
Yeah,
he's bigger shoulders, and Boots look like a 147 pounder.
Yeah, I was talking to people in the New York area or Northeast area camps, and I was saying they're like, hey, who do you got? And everyone's asking who you got. They're all DMing me, who you got? Who you got? And I'm like, oh yeah, listen, I'm leaning towards Boots, you know, because he's Boots, but also I can see how he loses this fight. And if he, just like I said before, if he does what he's done in the past with these guys, then he's gonna lose. But Boots has never fought someone this big. And they're like, oh, Boots is huge. I'm like, I've been around both these guys. I've been in the ring with Xander. I've been around Boots. Xander is a much bigger guy. I'm eye to eye with Boots. He's about my height, definitely bigger than me, obviously. He's got more.
He's bulky.
Yeah, he's got more muscle on him for sure. Xander towers over me. Xander looks like a light heavyweight. People are underestimating how big he really is. Maybe they're not now because they saw him in person, but go to the fat camp comment.
I got a chuckle out of me when he said that. He's like, you in a fat camp? And I was thinking of the movie with Ben Stiller, and I'm thinking of Xander Zayas being like, lunch.
You're aging yourself there, Dan. You're showing your age on there. If I can't move,
lunch has been canceled due to a lack of hustle. And I thought that was a great line out of Boots, because there was like...
That's a movie wreck for you guys at home. Movie wreck. Fat camp.
Oh, it's a great movie. Heavyweights is an all-time classic. There were talks of this fight happening June 6th, which I'm surprised it wasn't, because that's right around the Puerto Rican Day Parade. Couldn't happen at the Garden due to the Knicks potentially being in the NBA Finals. If the Knicks can do that, I would love that as a Knicks fan. But there was like, Ennis is bringing up, oh, why didn't you want this June 6th? Oh, yeah, I know why, because you need more time to lose the weight. And then Zayas was like, no, this was always June 27th. And, talking to some top-ranked people, it was like, yeah, we had June 27th in Puerto Rico as Zayas's next fight, and it was probably going to be like more of a voluntary defense until they then pivoted to Boots. And I'm glad they did, because there's a lot of hype around this fight, and we're going to dissect everything from the body language right down to the X's and O's in the ring. It's going to be a while from now. It's 3 months away, which kind of sucks. I wish – no, 2 months away. I wish it was closer, but we have
don't
a lot
wish
of big
away the year,
up,
Dan. So. We got a lot of good things coming up. Don't wish away the year. Come on, man.
Yeah, I do. It's a blinding amount of news and fights. Something I just came across the news wire, aging myself even more there with that. I got a telegram about the Zone partnering with TNT Sports to bring you what they're calling The Fight, which will be a monthly boxing series starting July 4th, which is the date for Abdullah Mason versus Joe Cardona. And the most important thing is that fight will be airing on TNT Sports here in the United States. That's a huge thing to get boxing back on linear television. Came as a surprise because I hadn't heard anything about this. I like it. It'll be shoulder programming. I'm hearing like a studio show into the lead into the fights. Bleacher Report and House of Highlights, which have millions and millions of followers on socials, are going to help amplify the fights and amplify the fighters. This is a good thing. This is a great thing. Boxing on TV is what we need, because when boxing goes off TV, that's when we're in trouble. So I love this deal from DAZN. I think it's a brilliant, brilliant move.
First of all, what's TV? This is you're aging yourself again. What is TV? I don't watch TV at all, but listen, more boxing is good, no matter where it is, whether it's on TV or streaming or network or whatever. If it's in the cloud, I don't care. More boxing is better. But TV, I don't know. Is this a top-ranked deal? How does this work? Because Abdullah...
Top Rank was tagged in it, but it said it's going to be everyone. They're basically taking the fights that they already have planned, and one of them per month is going to be aired on TNT.
So this is open to other every promotion.
And the press release had mentioned Queensberry, Matchroom, Top Rank, Golden Boy, everyone. And
but Zuffa.
Oh, well, I was going to get to that in a second. This is a clear shot at Zuffa, and I love it. like you said, TV, like TV is one aspect of it. I haven't seen if like Turner is obviously with HBO. I don't know if it's going to, if these fights are going to air on HBO Max, because that's a game changer, because HBO Max has a ton of subscribers, way more than DAZN. So hopefully that's a thing. If you don't have TV, if you don't have cable, I'm one of the weirdos that still has cable. I actually flip through the channels on a nightly basis. And I said that in my video that I put out on socials. If you're flipping through the channels and you see boxing, you might stop and leave it on. But if you are have HBO Max, which is a bigger subscription than DAZN currently, and most importantly, getting House of Highlights and Bleacher Report, like those are very like big social accounts. And if they can promote fights and promote fighters, it's a good thing.
Good thing. More boxing is a good thing. But we have a lot of boxing. Like we're looking at every week, multiple cards a week, every week for the whole year.
Kind of crazy to go from like this sport is going to go extinct to now we have MVP
everyone,
on ESPN. Everyone
who said this sport was going to go extinct is an idiot. Like this fight was.
That's like what the great Larry Merchant once said. You can't kill it. I'm going to mess this up, but like you can't kill it. Nothing can save the sport.
Boxing,
and nothing can kill it.
You can't kill. Nothing will save boxing, and nothing will kill it. And that is absolutely true. Nothing. This sport's never going anywhere. It's the greatest sport in the world, hands down. There's nothing that compares to it. I don't care what fight sport. I don't care what other sport. I don't care what team sport. Boxing is the end all be all. It's the best sport in the world by far. It's just a small sport, but we're getting more and more coverage with streaming networks. Celestial TV is a thing again. I mean, not that it really ever went anywhere, but like for me, it's like, I gotta get cable now.
I really want to know. I'm gonna hit up some people. I really want to know.
I'm spending $1,000 a year on subscriptions.
Yeah, I have every. I'm like the ultimate sucker. I have cable.
No, I am too.
I do write it off.
You have to.
I do write it off. I'm the ultimate sucker. I have cable. I have Hulu. I have HBO Max. Well,
Netflix just went up to $20 a month. DAZN's, you know, $250, $270, $280.
Way more than that.
Then you got to do the yearly pay-per-view thing.
The DAZN ultimate is $450.
Yeah,
plus a year.
Plus, yeah. What does that make? What does that make? Netflix is $250, $450, $750, HBO. Yeah, I'm $1,000 a year I'm spending on subscription
to watch boxing,
so I can watch boxing. It's not for anything else. It's only for me to watch boxing.
You have a good accountant?
I do.
Well, you write it off. S Corp.
Chris Algieri Boxing Inc.
I don't even know what an S. I'm an S Corp. That guy.
There you go.
Write it off like Seinfeld. Just write it. You don't even know what that means. No, you just write it off. That's what I do at the end of the year. But I think this is a good thing. I don't see how this is a bad thing. If more people are watching fights, and I thought it was a great thing to start it with Abdullah Mason, who's fighting July 4th against Joe Cordina in Cleveland at the Cavs Stadium. That's just part of a bunch of fights that were just announced. The Top Rank are kicking it off with May 16th, Keyshawn Davis versus Nahir Albright. And then May 30th, Oshaki Foster versus Ray Ford. Banger. And then Abdullah Mason, Joe Cordina, July 4th, which is the start of this TNT Sports. So a lot of information there to dissect.
Standout fight for me there is Oshak and Ray Ford.
Yeah.
That's a hell of a fight. Really, really like that fight. Out of nowhere, too, because I really thought Oshaki and Navarrete were going to fight, which I really love that fight, too. But I'm not mad about this fight because, for one, it's a good fight. Two, it's Top Rank and Matchroom talking. So,
yeah.
The winner...
Seems like they have a strong bond here.
Which is brilliant. Eddie and Bob together.
Yeah, I saw Eddie yesterday talking with the Top Rank with Todd. And this is
awesome.
Great.
Awesome.
I mean, this is such a really good thing for boxing. And it's just like, put the egos aside. Let's all sort of coalition to bury Zuffa.
How about start a coalition to make boxing great?
Yeah. I don't want to. I'm not picking sides. I think I just tipped my hand a little bit. I'm not picking. If Zuffa, I want Zuffa to rise up too. Just sign Edgar Berlanga and Richardson Hitchens.
Yeah,
jumping all over the place here.
That's a whole nother thing. Are we talking about that right now? Are we going to move?
No, not yet. Later? I want to talk about Foster and Ray Ford.
Okay.
Fourth fight at 1:30 for Ford.
He's had that many at
30? 13th fight. Oh. 13th fight at 1:30 for Foster because. Both guys they're meeting now, but they're like going different ways, I thought. Like Foster's last fight against Fulton, people forget, was at 135.
Yeah, but that was
I thought that he was eventually just going to go up there. Yeah, But he did fight at 135, his last fight. So I thought maybe Foster is like, all right, getting a little long for 130. And then you have Ford, who was at 126, who had most of his success, if not all his success, at 126. And now he goes up to 130. So that's interesting. You know, Foster is a little long in the tooth, but he's still, I would say, at the very tippy end of his prime, where I feel like Ford is right in the heart of it. The vet versus the hungry guy in Ray Ford, who has that one loss to Nick Ball, that's really it. I mean, if he didn't have that one razor-thin loss, then I wonder if Ford would have stayed at 126 and maybe looked for some big fights there. But that's
he couldn't make the weight anymore. I worked a couple of Ford fights. That was just not possible for him anymore. And I think the weight had to do with that performance with Nick Ball. Very, very close fight, obviously. Moved up right afterwards. I think Ford is a 30-pounder now, for sure. Former world champion, and Oshak is big for 30, and I've said that before, but I think he makes the weight okay. I think he's a really disciplined guy. He works really hard, and understand where he's at, but like you said, 32 in those weight classes, 32 is when everybody starts to age out a little bit, especially at the lighter weights. So yeah, this is a timing fight, but I think all in all, it's a really good fight.
Yeah, it's an awesome fight, and that's May 30th. The Keyshawn Davis, Nahir Albright is whatever. I think we talked about that last week. It's I wanted more from Davis. Abdullah and Joe Cardina, July 4th. That's the Zone TNT.
Good first defense. Not a great fight, but good first defense.
Right. Don't love that either, but it is what it is.
I didn't realize Cardina's 34. Did you know that? 34.
We got a later start. I know he burst on the scene with that knockout of Ogawa. And then hasn't had a knockout since. And you have to raise an eyebrow to that. Yeah, right? But talking to the top-ranked people yesterday, they're just excited to have some structure. That was the word that was used. And we have a schedule now. We can then roll our sleeves up and do what we do. So between the Matchroom, Top Rank, Golden Boy, with TNT Sports, The Zone, this is a really encouraging start here. Let's get into the fight previews. Tyson Fury is returning to the ring for the first time in 15 months when he takes on the big man, Makhmadov. This is on Netflix this Saturday. Very interesting aspect there, too, is what type of viewership will this do? I haven't seen much of anything here in the States. Nothing like the Tyson Paul and the Joshua stuff and Canelo Crawford. This is an overseas vehicle. I'm curious to see how it does there, but Tyson Fury is back, and he seems like not as confident. I don't know if you saw some of these interviews. He had an interesting quote. I think he was on the Inside the Ring show, and he said he was shocked at how quickly Chisora and Wilder declined and wonder if that's next for him, which is so much different tune from Fury. I'm the best, I'm the greatest, I'm the best that's ever walked this earth in the heavyweight division. He's thinking about his own mortality here, which I found pretty interesting.
What do you mean? How fast they declined? How fast they declined what?
He couldn't believe how bad
they declined in terms of their skills.
Yes.
Oh, I thought you meant like declining a fight. I was like, oh. Yes, that's interesting. Because, like you said, you start to question your own mortality. Because I felt like that late in my career too. Like I might have said this on air. In my second to last fight, my last win, I fought Mikel Lapierre. I fought at the Garden in the small room.
Yeah, I was there.
And after the first round, I sat down. I had an existential crisis. I'm like, what the hell am I doing here? I'm like, this guy's fast. Like he was like, oh, he's faster than I expected. I'm like, ugh, I'm gonna go out there and do this and do that. Like it was. I've never ever had that process in my mind. I'm like, ugh, this is gonna be a long night, kind of thing. Like I was like, and then I was like, literally, like, what the hell am I doing here?
Why it's am like I a job?
Yeah, I'm like, yeah. I've never ever felt anything like that before. But I had like a lot of time to sit there in the corner. My coaches would talk to me. Didn't hear a goddamn word they said. And I was like, man, do I want to go out? It was after the first round. I was like, I didn't get hit with anything.
That's
either.
Wild.
I was like, do I want to go out there right now? And I'm like, eh. Yeah, it's just like you, mortality catches up really quick. And that's the thing people don't realize. The speed at which fights happen is actually super slow. And you have a lot of time to think. And some of the deepest thought I've ever had in my life was in the middle of fights. And you really get to kind of look inside yourself. And you have these existential moments where you're thinking about your inside, your outside, and everything in between. Yeah, that's interesting to hear Tyson be that way, because he's been such a wild man, and you never know what you're going to get. You're generally not going to get the slow-thinking, thoughtful guy. So that's curious to me. Good point, Dan.
Chris, your first round with Les Lepierre, you were 22 of 79.
22 of 79. Eh, not bad.
You threw 80 punches in the first round, and you didn't want to be there.
Yeah. What'd I throw the second round?
24 of 84. Dude, you were lighting it up this fight.
I threw
81 in the third round. You threw 910 punches in 10 rounds.
At 37 years old.
So that's, if my math's correct, you're averaging 91 punches thrown around.
Yeah, well, that's so
you didn't
so
want to be there.
So I decided after the first round, I was like, all right, I'm not going to make this boxing match because he's too fast, so I'm just going to overwhelm him. I'm just going to throw a lot of punches and work really
certainly
hard.
Certainly did.
Yeah. I was in good shape.
Only threw 600 punches.
Yeah, you know, I was in good shape. I felt strong. And then I was fighting at 142. So like I felt like I was the bigger, stronger guy. So I was like, I was just going to fight him. Almost stopped him, too. I heard him bad in the seventh or eighth round.
That was the night of the Triller, Jadakiss versus Dipset.
Maybe it was because there was so much weed smoke in the air that I was thinking that. Maybe that's what got me so thinking.
I know I've told the story before in this podcast. I've told the story in the podcast. I don't care. I'm telling it again. They had me and my dad up way. Usually we're on the ring counting the shots. They had us up higher, like where the cameras are, like shooting down. Like we're up there, but like a good view. We're on the stage of the theater. It's not a bad seat in there. It was just higher than usual, and I was higher than usual. So the fight started at like 5 p.m., which is weird. It was like 5 to 8 was the main boxing
because,
card.
Then because 8 p.m. The show was after, yeah.
Yeah, then at 8 p.m. they were going to break the ring down and set up this Triller versus Dipset versus the Lox. It was heavily anticipated. This was like right out of COVID. It was like the first big event in New York City. So me and my dad are like, yeah, we're going to stay for this and just hang out and see what it has. You fight, Michael Hunter fights, and then like as like the rap crowd is entering, the hip-hop crowd, more weed smoke is entering the room. And I'm like, okay, obviously we smell it. And then it becomes like really prevalent, like by your fight and then the main event. And, it, you know, smoke rises. And me and my dad are like looking at each other. I'm like, kind of.
You feeling? I'm feeling.
Yeah, like we're like giggling and shit. Like, man, I'm sure he's throwing a lot of punches. Maybe you didn't throw that many punches.
Maybe I threw more. Maybe you guys missed them because you were moving so slow.
No. That was a wild night. I still have a vlog from when I hung out Busta Rhymes.
I remember
that
in the back taking a shower in the locker rooms and like literally like the music was starting to pump because I was one of the last fights that night. And I think I was the co-main event before Michael Hunter. And like the air conditioning was pumping in like weed smoke. And my friends and my family were like, hey, do you want to stay and watch the show? And I was like, no, I need to get out of here. I need to get out of here ASAP.
It was nuts, man. It was, theater's not a big room. Like, they can't have all that weed smoke. That was a wild, wild night. Back to Fury, though. I believe, I think you would agree, and if you have eyeballs and you watch boxing, Fury's in the midst of like a 30-month slide right now. Beginning with the Ngannou fight, he's getting hit more, he's cutting more, he's getting cut more, I should say, and he can't sustain an offensive attack. Pulled up some numbers. Opponents are landing 45% of their total power shots. Over those last three fights, it's two Usyk fights.
Two of those are Usyk.
Two Usyk fights in Ngannou. The seven fights before that, opponents were landing just 31% of their power. He's throwing less punches. His output is down. He's just getting older. I mean, he's getting slower. I mean, this happens. So I'm very interested. That coupled with the comments that he made about, you know, am I going to decline? Like, because he says I still want to fight on. But I've never heard this side of Fury. I found it kind of a little more compelling than the usual braggadocious nonsense. Like, he's doubting himself. And, you know, Makhmudov is an underdog, but not as big as I thought. He's a plus 400. Fury's minus 600. Like, Makhmudov can crack. He gets hit easily. And, I mean, his two losses were KO losses.
But he's actually durable. Fury, you gotta take that and you got to look beyond it. He actually is durable.
Who?
Makhmudov. I know he's been stopped.
Yeah,
twice.
I know. I'm looking at this decision, bro.
No, he's durable. And that's something that I think people aren't really are taking into account because he's been stopped twice. Who was it? Vianello and it was Caballel?
Yeah.
Right? Well, Caballel's a fantastic body puncher and he stopped it to body. And Vianello, I actually rate Vianello. I think especially as an athlete and a big guy, he's got a good right hand. He's a good puncher, former tennis player, high level. I rate Vianello, and I was there that night, and the guy just couldn't miss a right hand. So, and but Makhmudov has balls of steel. Was getting cracked, went down, got hurt a bunch of times, kept fighting. And I spoke about this with Paulie not an hour ago. I think the distance is the bet.
Oh, yeah, plus 275.
Bingo.
That's, for Fury's decision.
Yes.
How about this, bro? Parlay, Ben stoppage, Fury decision, plus 400.
Woo.
I'm ice cold, my boxing bets.
Yeah, you are.
But you haven't won one in a while.
I feel like I this time of year, you generally go on cold spells. I wonder what that is. It's usually from like the March to June, and then you pick up and you kick ass the rest of the year.
Well, I have a Spurs. Me and my buddy placed a bet on the Spurs to win the whole NBA championship before the season started. Bro.
How's that going?
Amazing.
Okay.
We both put down a pretty good amount of money, and it was plus 4,000. And the Spurs are the second best team in the NBA. They're second in the West. Right now, the cash out, we could cash out and make a ton, but we're going to ride it every round. We're going to come out. Like,
what'd you put in?
This could be,
well, I mean, tell me off air, but okay.
A lot. Like, we're going to have a nice, my buddy talked me into it. He's really on the, like, good with the future bets. Like, the future bets, like, he's a stockbroker. The future bets are like a stock. Like, you invest.
Futures, yeah.
You invest, and you take a look at the market, and the market is showing, like, we can cash. They want us to cash out right now.
Yeah.
Which we would make a pretty good return, but the playoffs haven't even started yet. So every round that they advance, every playoff win that they have, our number's going to go up for the cash out until they eventually might win the whole damn thing. My last couple of bets in boxing, I had Chisora by knockout, did not win that one. I had a Talmo to win in rounds 3 and 4, missed that by one round. Yeah, so I'm 0 for my last two.
I'm in Jersey. Does DraftKings work here? Because I only bet when I'm in states that
should
my DraftKings work. Because with DraftKings, you can't bet in Florida. You've got to go through the commissions, the casinos. So
I'll be your bookie.
Yeah, which we have. I've called you for a few bets to put some money
old
down.
Old school style.
Yeah,
love that.
Hey, put $100 on this kid. I think he's gonna win.
It's like my dad too. He's like, how come you didn't tell me? I want some action on this. When I was like winning, like last year, when I was red hot winning bets.
I usually share my inside tips. I am pretty good at that.
I mean, I think you are good at that. I think we can bring a lot of value to the listener who wants to gamble on these fights. Fury minus 600, Makhmudov plus 400. The Fury decision is plus 275. Over to Makhmudov, like you were just saying, like he is durable. He's an enigma, though. He's 6'5", 260 pounds.
That's two shows in a row you use that word.
It's a good word. He decisions Dave Allen. That gets him ranked in 3 of the 4 sanctioning bodies. He's got 13 first-round knockouts, but he's also 3-2 in his last 5 fights, and the 2 losses were knockout losses to Vianello and Caballo. Like, they picked him for a reason. Like, Tyson Fury is fighting right now to get bigger fights. Joshua... maybe a run at Dubois, Wardley. Who knows? Like, Fury wants bigger and better. That's why Netflix has invested. This is a classic tune-up fight. But Makhmudov, you just don't know what version is going to show up for this guy. Like, is he durable or is he not? Like you said, Chris, like, you believe that he is durable, but he's got the 2 losses in his last 5 are stoppage losses, but he also has 13 first-round knockouts, albeit against not the greatest opposition. So I would say he's a live dog.
Live dog only if Tyson's a dead dog. This is entirely on Tyson Fury.
Bro, what is he going to look like?
That's the question. We don't know. He literally could show up a dead dog. He's been out of the ring for so long. You mentioned his decreasing numbers and his decline. Even his decline in his mental, in terms of his self-confidence, is obviously there as well. Makhmudov is going to be the best version of himself that he's ever been or could be come fight night, because he has to be.
Theory.
I think he's young enough, strong enough, durable enough, tough enough that he's going to show up, and he's going to. And like I said, I called that Vianello fight. Yo, he kept getting up. He was hurt bad. He kept coming. He kept trying. And I just don't think Tyson is that kind of puncher at heavyweight. And generally, as guys get older, they score less and less knockouts. Look at last weekend, Chisora and Deontay Wilder. Those guys would have never gone to decision if they weren't 40. When you're older, yeah. you just don't see guys knocking people out the same way. So I don't see this ending
unless you're George Foreman.
Unless you're George Foreman. But Tyson,
I don't know why George Foreman came into my brain when I was watching, like thinking about this fight. Because Fury, he's made so much money.
Yeah, but even George, other than Michael Moore, he wasn't knocking out top flight guys.
No, but I'm thinking like a guy in their late 30s, early 40s that was still knocking guys out. It's a different thing. Like Foreman came to mind when I'm thinking about this fight. Because I'm like, what is Fury's like immediate future? Like he's talking about fighting Joshua. He thinks it's going to be a huge fight. He's maybe brought up potentially fighting Usyk again, potentially fighting Wardley Dubois winner, which would be a breath of fresh air. And it would be Fury going for like one last shot at a belt. I could see him fighting on because he loves it. I could also see him just disappearing because he's done that 5 times now. This is his 5th retirement and then him coming back. I could see him fighting on like into his 40s because it's just what he loves to do. Or I could see him just like disappearing. That's why I thought of Foreman,
No, he's going to fight AJ next. He wins this fight, he's fighting AJ.
Oh, I hope so.
That's leaving that money on the table would be absolutely insane.
I know the Wilder thing came up, and that was like the flavor of the day.
Who cares? I don't want to see them fight again. I don't think they should fight again. They damaged each other enough. Oh no, no, that, no Wilder 100%. Joshua. Joshua needs to fight both Tyson and Deontay.
You think he'll do that back to back?
Why not?
So Hearn was at the presser yesterday, and he said, "We need a comeback fight for Joshua, and Wilder is a comeback fight. He's a tune-up." Which is obviously like showmanship and like.
Yeah, I don't think.
I would be absolutely shocked if Joshua would fight Wilder next, then Fury. They're not going to mess up the Fury.
I think Joshua come right back to Tyson. They should fight in the fall. And then he should fight, regardless of how the fight goes, he should fight Deontay in the spring. And then go fight Jake Paul again. And just call it a career. Because I think Anthony has done it all. He's done so well financially. He's done so well in terms of winning titles. I think he's kept his brand intact. I think he's probably more loved globally now than he ever has been, which is really hard to do coming off of a couple bad losses the way he has. America knows who he is now. People love him here. So I think he can do a real nice little run and make a ton of money with these last couple fights that aren't as dangerous as these young guys. I don't want to see him fight.
Like a retirement tour?
Yeah, I don't want to see him fight Wardley. I don't want to see him fight Caballel. I don't want to see him fight Dubois again. I want him to fight these older guys. I want to see him with Tyson Fury. I want to see him with Deontay Wilder. I want to close that circle, man.
Yeah, definitely. Cliff Rolt was a really good follow on Twitter, like a boxing historian type of guy. He said, like, he made a good point. He feels like boxing is, like, on 2 tracks right now. There's, like, the Elder Statesman retirement tour, like the AJ versus Wilder, AJ versus Fury. And then there's the Talmas, the Wardleys, the Dubois.
Well, the heavyweight division. Heavyweight division, 100%.
Heavyweight division, yeah. And they're running on 2 different tracks right now, which is fine. But, like, I wouldn't mind seeing a fresh matchup every once in a while. Like, if Fury wins... And obviously against Makhmudov, and then like Wardley wins. Like, I wonder if Fury would entertain that fight to win a strap and go that route, or do you believe that Fury is just dead set on Joshua? He's going to stay on the elder track.
Depends how he wins, because the delusional boxer mind is an amazing thing. He goes out there and he looks good and feels good against Makhmudov. If he's on his toes and flicking jabs and slipping and sliding the way he did, you know, and he's in there, bing, 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 and he's whipping on Makhmudov, he gets on that microphone at the end of that fight and he goes, "Bring me Wadley, bring me Usyk, bring me everybody." I'm telling you right now, that mind will switch so fast. That confidence will come back with a victory. If he goes out there and struggles, I don't see him doing that. I think he's going to be like,
yeah, don't want to see him fight Usyk again.
No. I don't want to see him fight Wilder. I don't want to see him fight Usyk. The only fight for Tyson Fury, in my mind, after this fight, get over this hump, is Anthony Joshua.
Yeah, totally agree. But it'll be interesting to see how Fury looks in this one. I think we talked about in the last Usyk fight, he was not clinching. He was fainting less. Someone went and counted all. We don't track that at CompuBox, but that just shows you a little bit of reflexes aren't there as well. But I'm curious to see. 37 years old, well, a lot of mileage.
Feints take a lot of conditioning. Conditioning to be that make that fast. It takes a lot out of you, actually.
So we'll see. We'll see for sure. As a fight on Netflix. Another thing too is the business aspect of this. This is Netflix's first true men's boxing card that doesn't involve a Jake Paul, a Canelo Alvarez, or a Terrence Crawford. Obviously, Taylor Serrano 3 was on Netflix. That did 6 million views. Tyson Paul did 108 million. Canelo Crawford did 41 million. Paul versus Joshua did 33 million. The boxing nerd in me wonders where this falls. Like, I think it will do more than 10 worldwide.
It's a very UK heavy card. Very UK heavy. Yeah. And even Regis Progray, who fought a bunch of his fights over there, and you know, that's is well known over there as well. You know, you got Conor Benn, you got him, you've got obviously Tyson.
Justice Hooney versus Fraser Clark.
Very UK heavy card. So they're banking on the strength of UK fans purchasing this for sure, or tuning into this, I should say.
It's not a bad bet. Show on Netflix.
Not a bad bet. You know, I know they're good at showing up. Are they good at tuning in? You know, the issue for UK though, it's not like here. Here, people stay home. UK, you go to bars, you go and watch fights out. So I feel like that.
Yeah, I wonder how they calculate that.
I feel like that equates to less numbers of subscriptions. Like, everyone stays home here, not there. Everyone watches everything together. They have much more community when it comes to sports, especially fights.
I think here in the States, it's going to struggle a bit because we've got the Masters. It's definitely getting warmer out. There's other sports on. NBA is like nearing the end. It's not playoffs yet, but close. Like, here it's going to be a lower type
bet.
Number.
You're going to quit boxing. You win that Spurs bet.
Could retire off of that. That's what I mean. Love me some Spurs. So we'll see what like type of numbers it does in the ratings, which is interesting. Co-main event, the $20 million fight, $15 million of it's going to Conor Benn, supposedly a $5 million purse for Regis Progray. Conor Benn versus Regis Progray. I think the entire boxing community is pulling for Regis Progray in this fight. Could he pull it off? I don't think so. He's never fought. He's fought above 150 once in 2013. Ben's coming down from 160. Looks a little drained on fight week. But all eyes will be on this fight one way or another because Conor Benn, the biggest pariah in boxing right now.
Yeah, he is a very unliked individual for a whole lot of reasons. But I'm looking at DraftKings right now. Conor Benn minus 1,600 favorite, plus 800 for Regis.
Ben stoppage is healthy.
Over 5.5 rounds, negative 115. So Conor Benn by KO, TKO, DQ, minus 320.
Yep.
Conor Benn by decision, plus 320. So Vegas is thinking stoppage. Regis by KO, plus 1,200. Not really seeing that. But listen, you mentioned it. Conor looks terrible at the weight. These pictures that came out, first of all, on Tuesday, he was doing some kind of they did the face off. They were on top of some building dressed like a Mission Impossible, looking to jump out of a plane for some reason. And I looked at it right away, and I Ben was wearing full clothing. I'm like, oh, he looks sucked out. That's Tuesday of fight week. Weigh-ins on Friday. Being that sucked that early, not a good sign. And then they just came out with some promotional shirtless photos of Ben flexing, and he looks like he's been in a concentration camp for the past 2 months. He looks really, really rough. So I'm not sure how that's going to equate to fight night with the refeed, how much time they have. That's another thing. Paulie Malignaggi always freaks out about how much time guys have between weigh-ins and fights. Yeah, and then Ben, I don't know if it's going to matter. You know, Paulie Malignaggi always complains about the weigh-ins being 30-plus hours from weigh-in to fight night, so I'm not sure how his refeed's going to go. But listen, the guy hasn't made 147 in 4 years. You know, he's fighting at 160. He was weighing in, 170-ish when he was in the ring with... Right, this is a catch rate at 150. But there are talks of him coming back down to 147. He's got a high ranking in WBC. He's now with Zuffa that doesn't have tweener weights. So he's kind of between a rock and a hard place. Like, you're fighting at 150 for this fight. And you've got a high ranking of 47, but making 150 seems like he's having a lot of problems. Now, is that going to equate to problems that on fight night? It might not. He might refeed and be fine. You know, he's 28, 29 years old. Making weight back then and being able to refeed is a little bit different. But from the photos that have been coming out this week, he does not look like this has been a good weight cut. Is it going to affect the fight? We don't know. Could not at all. We've seen guys look terrible on scales and then go out there and fight 12 hard rounds and look vicious and awesome. So it's hard to say. So curious to see. But I have to tend to agree with you. You've got Regis Progre across the corner from him, who's fighting at 150, hasn't really fought anywhere near a world-class level above 140, has been getting dropped at 40, has been getting outboxed by guys who are much smaller than him, life and death with a 130-pounder and Jojo Diaz, now jumping up to 150 to a guy who fought at 160 his last fight. So many things against Regis on this fight card. But like you said, he might be making $5 million. So at 37 years old, making $5 million, can't really knock him.
Progre's career arc needs to be studied, man. This guy, title shot at 28. I had heard about him for a while before that because he was signed at DiBello. I was like, man, this guy's got it. He's got a star quality about him. I love this fighting style. Gets the title shot at 28, wins the title. Super 6 tournament, loses to Josh Taylor. Then he goes to Triller and fights a bunch of like low opposition for where he was at that time, but was getting paid like handsomely. He parlays that into the Devin Haney title fight because he wins that fight over Zepeda, which was like a purse bid situation that he won. He fights Devin Haney, gets dropped in that fight, and then he fights Jack Catterall, gets dropped in that fight twice.
A few times, yeah.
And then the Jojo Diaz fight was the most worrisome of them all because she said 130-pounder moving up, getting wobbled by jabs. I think like a stiff wind could blow over Regis Progre at this point. There's talks of him being injured, which is coming from Eddie Hearn. I don't know if that's him being a troll because he's not involved in this fight. He's addressing these injury allegations in interviews, Progre. I mean, everything is set up for Ben to have a spectacular knockout in this fight. I mean, knockout is minus money in this one. But with Ben, yeah, like coming down from 160, like what's his weight class? Like coming down from 160 where he doesn't belong, he cannot hang with the guys at 154 because he's just not a big enough puncher and he's just not big enough. Like 147 is going to be a real feat for him to make, but that's where he's ranked up one to WBC. That's where there's just like a slew of fights, whether it's Haney, whether it's Ryan Garcia, whether it's Rolly Romero at 147. Those are the marketable fights. Like that's why Zuffa is investing in this guy. So he's stuck between a rock and a hard place. Is right, because like what is he? Like I don't think he even knows what he is at this point.
No, he doesn't know, and I think he's trying to find his place, and he's kind of always been that. You know, he's obviously his father's son.
He's rich, that's for sure.
But he's been rich. He was born rich. With that, you know, he is richer. His father's son first and foremost. And you know, he's at a place now, and he's making big money for this fight. He's another career arc that should be studied. You got two guys fighting each other who have right? career arcs that are crossing that are wild to think about. But Progre has been, he says something great. He goes, I've been number one in the world. Ben will never be number one in the world. Regis said something really poignant, I thought, during one of these build-ups. He goes, I've been number one in the world. Conor Ben will never be number one in the world. You know, so like we're comparing career arcs that have been odd in terms of how much money they've been able to make. Yeah, there's that. But also that's a good point by Progre, and you touched on it too. It's like, where does Ben fall? Where can he can be? Listen, welterweight's getting tough again. It was a weak weight class a year ago. It's not anymore. There's a bunch of studs. There's a bunch of big-name guys. There's also these young up-and-coming guys who a lot of them have actually been signing to Zuffa. You know, they got this kid, Tito Mercado, who is
good.
Possibly going to be going that way. That kid's an absolute stud.
He hasn't signed with them yet, right, officially?
Yeah, he has not signed with them yet. I'm foreshadowing because it just seemed like he is going that way. Where else is he going to go, really? You know, you got a young guy like that. But, yeah, no, there's a bunch of studs at 47 now that are live fights for a guy like Ben who has not been in deep. He has not been tested yet, especially with anybody young and hungry. You know, his best
I don't think people are looking at him to win these fights at welterweight. He just needs to get in them. They're big
well,
spectacles.
He's talking his way into all of them, except he's signing contracts to get away from them. So it's interesting to see. You know, we're seeing a lot of that nowadays with guys calling out all these people. Like, even like Ryan did that recently. He's calling out a whole slew of guys. And, you know, he's calling out Teofimo Lopez, Shakur Stevenson. Dude, you should be calling out Devin Haney and Rolly Romero. That's it. Those are the fights that could be made. That should be made.
Well, that's
why are you talking about other guys?
Yeah, this is the first Zuffa fight for Conor Benn. This is a Zuffa promoted event, the whole thing. Which I still think there's a pipeline to being signed with Zuffa and being able to fight under Riyadh season, where we could see a Haney versus.
Well, there's tiers. There's tiers. You look at. So there's the and it's becoming. I mean, it's very muddled, but it's confusing. But it's becoming a little more apparent. You've got Jai Opatai, right, signed IBF world champion. They just signed Richards and Hitchens. And Mannix came out and said that Hitchens is going to campaign at 140. 140 is not supposed to be a Zuffa weight class.
God.
Cruiserweight's not supposed to be a Zuffa weight class. But they're champions. So they're creating the weight classes for those guys.
But they're going to get stripped.
There's a tier right there. So you've got a tier there where you've got the signings of Jai Opatai and Richards and Hitchens, who are current world champions. Very legit guys. Then you've got a Conor Benn, who's not a champion, but is a very high-level profile, much higher than Jai and Hitchens, but not a champion. Now, where does he fall in the mix? Probably in the another tier. And then you've got everyone else who's getting signed to the league format. And they're going to fall in line. You see these guys, like last week we saw Mark Moxayo, former featherweight world champion, fighting at 135 because he had to. He probably could have made 30, but he had to fight at 35 because he signed into that lower tier. Fergal McCrory, 130 pounder fight. It's a mark at 35 because that's the weight class. But then you've got 40 for Hitchens, you've got 200 for Jai, and you've got Ben 150, whatever. Which isn't. We're making up weight classes. He's an in between weight class now. So, yeah. So we're seeing different tiers for different guys.
Yeah. So I don't know with Ben at 150 is going to be interesting. He wants to get down to 147. He should have a spectacular knockout. I'm going Ben by stoppage, late stoppage in this fight, and I like Fury by decision. You can parlay that for plus 392, and that's a good number right there. But you talk about Zuffa and all these, like, they're making up their own weight classes, and they're signing guys. They just signed Richardson Hitchens, who's a champion at 140 with the IBF, but clearly he's going to get stripped or should get stripped because if they follow the same Opatai path. Edgar Berlanga.
Well, if he fights for the Zuffa title, because that was the stipulation for Jai. It was because he was fighting for the Zuffa title. It wasn't because he was fighting for Zuffa. It was because he was fighting for the title.
But why wouldn't Zuffa want their titles on the line?
Well, of course. But if Hitchens' first fight is not a Zuffa title fight, technically, he still could be defending his title. The problem there is he's got to defend it against Adolfo Delgado, who is not in.
Well, I heard a podcast had, I think it was called this, I want to get it right, the Spit Bucket Podcast, had Lindolfo on, and he kind of intimated that he might sign with Zuffa as well. Lindolfo.
Robert Garcia said that his guys are all willing. They are like really down to sign to Zuffa.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Robert Garcia is doing like PR work for Zuffa. He's speaking very highly of them, and not that
all
he
the coaches
do
are
that.
Freddie Roach is too.
Well, Roach has like a connection.
So is Meridian. So is Keith Connolly.
Oh, I mean,
Keith
Connolly.
These guys are all on board.
Berlanga to Zuffa is it just
Duh.
A match.
Duh.
Berlanga to Zuffa is a match made in heaven, because if you think about it, they're very similar. Both don't have any real titles. There's no real idea of where they're going. And it's a lot of bluster with
but
no
they're popular.
Real.
People pay attention.
Right, they're popular. It's a lot of bluster with no real substance. So I think Berlanga should be the face of Zuffa. That's the most clear yes type of signing that Zuffa has had so far, is Edgar Berlanga.
Yeah, it makes the most sense, for sure. Like, when, and I don't know if I said it on this show or one of my other shows, but this was writing on the wall. Keith Connolly is the conduit to bringing fighters to
Zuffa. Oh, he's burned
obviously.
That bridge big time at Matchroom. Eddie was cursing his name yesterday at the presser.
He's going to take his guys now, because, you know, Eddie went publicly and said, I don't want to work with Keith Connolly anymore or his fighters. So any fighter that he has, going right to Zuffa.
Not much leverage there for Zuffa.
Yeah, true.
Not much leverage for Connolly to make deals with Zuffa, because they know his fighters have nowhere to go. But it's weird because it's like
– quite all right.
Yeah, they're signing fighters for big money, Zuffa, which we thought wouldn't be the case. And then they're having them fight – they're signing guys that they're in weight classes that they don't have. It just goes right back to the number one problem we have with Zuffa is the message is so muddled, and we have no idea.
It's getting what it
muddier. Muddier. They're signing big names, and we don't know how it's all going to fit. It's just boxing's in a crazy place right now. Absolutely crazy. Big fights coming up on this weekend with Tyson Fury. We'll have a new show on Sunday breaking it all down. I got Fury by decision and then Ben by stoppage. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I definitely go on Fury decision. Ben should stop Progre. And
not.
Even though Progre's never been stopped, you know, he just hasn't looked good in this weight class is also that. But also, Ben looks so drained. So, I don't know. I don't think it's enough for Ben to lose, but maybe he sees the end. Because, listen, Ben hasn't looked like a devastating puncher in a really long time. So, even with a much smaller guy, is he going to be able to bring that back, you know, when he's struggling with the weight? I don't know. Maybe it goes decision.
Yeah. So those are our fight picks. We'll have our show on Sunday breaking it all down. As always, everyone, protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Stay out of those DMs. We're out.